Welcome to Daily Wisdom, Walking the Path with the Buddha, a podcast shared by David Roylance. This podcast is dedicated to guiding you to completely eliminate the discontent mind and the suffering it causes by attaining enlightenment. Learn and practice the teachings of Gautama Buddha that will guide you to fully attain a peaceful, calm, serene, and content mind with joy. To support this podcast, visit patreon.com/supportbuddha or visit buddhadailywisdom.com, where you will discover a full range of courses, retreats, and online learning resources to assist you on the path to enlightenment. Now, here's our teacher to share more.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and get started this evening by welcoming all of you guys. Sawadee Kap, welcome to all of you guys. I would like to start by just apologizing for being a bit behind schedule. This is what we were talking about this morning with impermanence, right? That things aren't permanent and that things are going to be constantly changing in the world. And if your mind is craving permanence and wanting things to be a certain way, you'll be upset and you'll be frustrated and agitated and annoyed. But if you don't have craving, desire, attachment, if you're not holding on and clinging, you can maintain your contentedness and your peacefulness. So if you were quite peaceful while you were waiting here, that means you probably didn't have craving, desire, attachment. But if you noticed you were annoyed or disappointed or frustrated, you're not a bad person. You haven't done anything wrong. It's just that the mind has craving in there, wanting things to be a certain way. So this is where you can take situations like this and directly apply the teachings of the Buddha and see how true his teachings really are, describing how the mind functions and how the world functions around you. So again, thank you all for being here. Thank you for being patient and waiting. Tonight, what we're going to be doing is I'm going to guide you guys in a breathing mindfulness meditation session to get us started. Then we're going to move into a talk about the three poisons. These are the three high-level challenges that the unenlightened mind is experiencing. I'm going to explain to you what these are and how they're affecting the mind. And then I'm going to explain to you the solutions and how to solve this. Because by understanding what is plaguing the unenlightened mind and understanding the solutions, you can then fix it. But if you don't understand the problem in the solution, then you wouldn't be able to actually fix it. So welcome to all of you guys that are here. Welcome to those of you guys that are joining us online. As we go in our class, you guys are welcome to ask any and all questions by just using a microphone here. That way the people online will be able to hear you. And those of you guys that are online, you can ask questions by putting that into Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom. Or in Zoom, you can electronically raise your hand and ask any questions or follow-up questions directly. So if you guys would like to join for meditation, I'm going to start with some chanting just to kind of ease us into meditation. This isn't anything mystical or magical. It's just to help bring some awareness to the mind and awareness of the breath. And you're welcome to chant along. We have the chants on the laminated sheet over there on the table. If you'd like to chant along, you're welcome to do that. And then once we get into meditation, I'll guide you in the meditation from there. Then there'll be a period of time where it'll just be quiet and we'll just be meditating together. And then I'll come out of the meditation with some chanting before we move into our class. Okay, so make yourself comfortable and then I'll come back with some guidance after the chanting.
Arahaṃ sammāsambuddho mahākyavā Bhūtaṃ mahākyavanhaṃ apivātiyami Savakato Mahakyavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami Supatipano Mahakyavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami Napmo Arhasa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Namo Arhasa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Arhasa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Iti piso bhagava arahaṃ sammasammuddho. Vicacaraṇaṃ sammuno sakkhato rokkhavito. Anuttaro purisa namasati satatava manusanam. Otto bhagavati.
Okay, with the lower body and hands and arms comfortable, and the upper body erect, just close the eyes and start breathing in through the nose and out through the nose. Here you're just looking to establish the breath, a nice, natural, steady, consistent breath. Not forced or controlled, just a gradual inhale through the nose, experiencing the full breath. And then, whenever you're ready, exhale out through the nose, breathing in. And out. Breathing in. And out. Your breath may not match up with the guidance that I'm providing, and that's okay. This is your practice. I'm just here for guidance. You can use this voice as a reminder that whenever you get to the next inhale, breathing gradually through the nose, establishing a nice, natural, steady, consistent breath. And then whenever you're ready, exhale out through the nose, experiencing the full breath. Breathing in and out. Breathing in and out. Once the breath is well established, start fixating the mind on the breath, either the sound of the breath coming into the nose or the sensation of air moving over the skin into the nose. The breath is the present moment. Fixate the mind on the breath, the present moment. Breathing in and out. Breathing in. And out. With the mind fixated on the breath, whenever you notice that it moves off the breath, cut that off, let it go, and come back to the breath, the present moment. No need to observe the thought, label it, judge it, analyze it, or even try to figure out where it's coming from. Whenever you notice that the mind is moved off the breath, cut that off, let it go, and come back to the breath, the present moment. Breathing in and out. Breathing in and out. I'm going to be quiet now and let you do this work of focusing on the breath, cutting off and letting go anytime the mind moves off the breath. You have nowhere to go. There's nothing to do. No one needs you right now. This is your time to focus on the breath. Breathing in and out.
สัมมาสัมพุทธัมมะเกวะ โอตังมหาเกวันทังอภิวาติมิ สวากขาโตมหาเกวัตตาธัมโม ดามังนมัสสามิ สุปฏิปันโนมหาเกวัตโต สาวกสังโฆ สังฆังนามามิ นะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโต อะระหะโต สัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะ นะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโต อะระหะโต สัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะ นะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโต อะระหะโต สัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะ ไอติปิโสมหาเกวะ อะระหังสัมมาสัมพุทโธ วิจารณังสัมมุโน สกัตโตโรกาวิโต อนุตตโรปุริสะ ดามาสติสตาตาวามนุสนัง โพโตภาควาติ
If you'd like to slowly make your way out of meditation. Okay, once again, I'll just welcome all of you guys that are here at the temple, and those of you guys online, welcome to everyone. This evening session is to learn about the three poisons. They're also referred to as the three unwholesome roots or the three fires. These are the three high-level pollutions that are in the mind that are keeping the mind in the unenlightened state. By understanding the three poisons, you're going to understand a broader and a deeper understanding of what's causing the discontent feelings in the mind. This morning, I talked about the Four Noble Truths, which gives you a window into understanding what's causing the feelings like anger, sadness, frustration, irritation, annoyance, guilt, shame, fear, boredom, loneliness, shyness, resentment, jealousy, any kind of displeasure or stress or anxiety in the mind. You learned about craving, desire, attachment, this mental longing and strong eagerness, the wanting, the expecting. That's what you learn in the Four Noble Truths. In four simple statements, the Buddha explains the problem, the cause, the elimination, and then the path forward. Tomorrow, you're going to learn the Eightfold Path, which is really helping you to understand the solution of how to fix this in detail. But here with the three poisons, you're broadening your understanding of what's really causing the mind to experience these discontent feelings and then also deepening it. And I'm going to talk a bit about the solutions too. So as I always share, as you guys would like to ask any questions, feel free to ask those here. If you could just use the mics, there's a gray button. You turn it on. Just wait for the light to come on. It'll take a second or two. And then if you hold it up to your chin, you'll be able to talk and they'll be able to hear you online. We'll be able to hear you at the temple. And then for those of you guys online, if you have questions, you can put them into Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom. Or in Zoom, you can raise your hand electronically and then open up your mic and we'll hear you here at the temple. So first, what I would like to do is just kind of talk generally about the three poisons to help you guys understand what they are before I go into talking about them in more detail. The three poisons, or the three unwholesome roots, or the three fires, these are also known as the defilements, or we sometimes refer to them as pollutions or taints. This is what is causing the mind to experience this unenlightened state. It explains why the mind experiences certain feelings, and it also explains why you're making certain decisions in the way that you do. Whenever you make decisions through the three unwholesome roots, it's going to produce unwholesome results, or also referred to as unwholesome karma. Some people refer to it as karma. This is the Sanskrit version of this word. The word karma is the Pali version. The original words of the Buddha are in the Pali text, or the Pali canon. It's the Pali language. So people who study the original teachings of the Buddha will tend to use karma, where other people who study Sanskrit and other traditions in Sanskrit, they will tend to use karma. But it's referring to the same thing. It's this natural law of cause and effect, or action and result. It's the results of your decisions. It's not mystical or magical. It's not punishments or rewards. There's no entity that's overseeing this and controlling it. It's not even about who's at fault or who's to blame. It's essentially a sequence of events that when there's certain decisions that are made through craving, anger, and ignorance, which are the three poisons, and you'll understand what those are here as we talk. Whenever you're making decisions through these, it's going to produce unwholesome results. But then when you transform your mind and you're practicing the three wholesome roots, then you'll be able to make wise decisions that are then going to produce wholesome results. And you'll see as we go, I'll explain this in more detail. So these three poisons are explaining the problems of what's plaguing the unenlightened mind, and then the antidotes or the remedies to these is what's explaining the solutions. So when we call them the poisons, we refer to the remedies as antidotes, or when we call them the three unwholesome roots, we call the solutions the wholesome roots, or when we talk about them as the three fires, we talk about what extinguishes the fires. And that's what you're doing on this path to enlightenment, is you're bringing down the pollutions of mind, these three unwholesome roots, and then you're increasing the wholesome roots, and you're arising these wholesome roots in the mind. So the antidotes, or the remedies, or the solutions, are referred to as the three wholesome roots. And when you're making decisions through these, that's what's going to produce the wholesome results, or the wholesome karma in your life. So I'm going to talk about these as a high level first, and then we're going to go into each one individually and talk about them in detail. This first one is craving. Some people refer to this as greed or desire or attachment. This is what we were talking about this morning when we were talking about the Four Noble Truths. Here, it's one of the primary problems in the unenlightened mind. This is the mind having longing and yearning, chasing after certain wants and certain desires, certain selfish desires, longing and yearning. It's the mind pulling towards something, thinking that the next new shiny object waiting around the corner is going to provide some kind of lasting satisfaction. So if you've ever been in the mall and you've been like, oh, a new pair of shoes. Oh, I got to have those. Yes, 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 yes. Oh, I can't wait to get those shoes on my feet. Oh, it's going to be so amazing. Or, oh, new phone. Yes, I need that new phone. Or those new clothes or whatever it is. Your mind's longing, yearning, thinking that this thing outside of you is going to provide some kind of lasting satisfaction. It's like the next new shiny object waiting around the corner is going to provide some lasting satisfaction. So the mind chases after it. It can be a object, or it could be a boyfriend, a girlfriend. It could be more money, a bigger house. The craving, desire, attachment isn't the object itself. It's inside the mind. It's the pulling. It's the longing. It's the yearning. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? Have you experienced this before, where your mind's pulling towards something, thinking that there's something external that's going to provide lasting satisfaction? And if you get that thing, you get pleasant feelings, you get happy, you get excited, you get elated. But if you don't get that thing, then you get angry, or you get sad, or you get frustrated, or some other painful feeling. So this is the craving, desire, attachment, the mind chasing after its own selfish desires. Then there's this anger, hatred, ill will. This is the next thing that occurs, that when the mind is craving and it's longing, it's yearning, if it gets the objects of its affection, it gets pleasant feelings. But if it doesn't get what it wants, this is where the anger can arise, the hostility, the bitterness, the animosity. And sometimes that comes out through your intentions, your speech, and your actions towards another person. When there's craving in the mind and you don't get what you want, and this anger is arising, you might falsely attribute those feelings of anger towards something external. You might think that this person is causing you to be angry, or this situation is causing you to be angry, when in reality, it's your own cravings, desires, attachments that's causing that. So when this anger is arising, what an unenlightened mind will typically do is it'll push this person away, or it'll push the situation away, and it thinks that that's going to solve the problem because it's misunderstanding what the real problem is. So it thinks if I just push this person away or this situation away, that'll solve my problem. But it doesn't solve your problem because it's only a matter of time before you get irritated or annoyed about something else. If that's the real problem, when you push it away, it would solve your problem. You would be peaceful for the rest of your life. But it doesn't solve the problem. You just get annoyed or agitated or irritated about something else. Also, when there's this craving in the mind and then there's this anger that arises, not only can you potentially push people or push a situation away, you might become bitter and harsh and hostile through your intentions, your speech, and your actions. You might be having animosity or bitterness. And now when you do that, someone might choose to leave out of your life. They're not interested in being around you because you're really harsh and hostile and bitter to them, right? This is the mind trying to fear somebody into doing something your way. Or the third thing, when this anger arises, you might put your expectations on someone and try to control them and get them to do something your way. So this is all coming from the anger, the hatred, the ill will, the bitterness, the hostility, the animosity that's in the mind. And there's remedies for all of these things. But then what's causing craving and anger to continue to exist in the mind is this ignorance, this third one. Oftentimes it's translated to ignorance or delusion. The phrase that I like to use is the unknowing of true reality, because what ignorance is nowadays it's more of a derogatory word. It's kind of a demeaning word if you call somebody ignorant. So really what this is a lack of wisdom. That's what this is. This is one of the pollutions in the mind, that the unenlightened mind has this unknowing of true reality, this lack of wisdom, that it just doesn't understand what it doesn't understand. You're not a bad person. You haven't necessarily done anything wrong, so to speak. It's just that the mind lacks wisdom. It just doesn't understand what's causing this anger to arise. It falsely believes, and it sometimes firmly believes, that this person is causing me to be angry. They are the problem, right? This is what the mind firmly believes, and that's because of the ignorance or the delusion. Or some people call it confusion or misunderstanding. It's because of ignorance that craving and anger continues to exist. So even though we call it craving, anger, and ignorance, it's really because of ignorance, because of this lack of wisdom, that craving continues to exist in your mind, and then the anger continues to exist. So as long as this ignorance is in the mind, then you'll continue to experience this anger and bitterness and hostility over and over and over again, this irritation, this annoyance, all these discontent feelings. So this is that dullness, the confusion, the misperception, the unknowing or wrong views of reality, not understanding how the mind is truly working. So these are the three high-level descriptions of these three poisons. Now we're going to go into each one of these and talk about them individually, because it's these three poisons that is motivating all this non-virtuous or unskillful intention, speech, and actions. When you're being bitter and harsh and hostile, when you're doing anything unwise, it's all being motivated by these three poisons. So now when you understand what they are, I'm going to talk about them each a little bit more in detail, and then I'm going to talk about the solutions and explain to you how to solve these. So this craving, this is that burning desire, that never-ending thirst, this yearning. There's never enough. The mind always wants more, right? You get a certain job and you might start out at $30,000 a year and you're like, ah, this is so wonderful. Yes, $30,000 a year. Oh, that's so much money. Yes, yes, yes. And then you're happy for a period of time, but that happiness wears off and it fades away. And now you want 40 or 50,000 and you're like, ah, man, I don't make enough money. I just want more money. I need more money. I need more money. And now you work and work and work and work and work. You long and you yearn, you work to get that 50,000. And then you get so happy when you get 50,000 a year. And now you're happy for maybe a week or two or a month or two or three. And then over time, that happiness fades away too. And now you want 80,000 or 100,000 or 120. The mind just keeps wanting more and more and more. Or you have you know, 20 Facebook friends, and then you want 50, and you want 100, and you want 1,000, and you want more perhaps, or maybe it's shoes, or maybe it's jewelry, or maybe it's something else. There's something that the mind's always going to be craving and longing and yearning and chasing after, and thinking that this external thing is going to provide lasting satisfaction. So it keeps chasing and chasing and chasing. And you might go down one path for a while, thinking that it's a new house that you need, or a new car, or something else, and you chase that for a while. You get it, and then the happiness wears off, and then you switch to something else. And now you might chase that thing for a while, and then you get it or you don't, and you get frustrated and angry. This is because of the craving, desire, attachment. You might chase a boyfriend or a girlfriend, or like I mentioned, the jewelry or some other thing, some job. You just chase it and chase it and chase it. It's the mind thinking that something external is going to provide lasting satisfaction, so it chases. And it actually feels justified in this chase for a period of time. When you get what you want and you feel those pleasant feelings of happiness, you think like, ah, this is worthwhile. This was a worthwhile chase because I got what I wanted and I got those pleasant feelings and they feel good. And they might feel good for a few days or a few weeks or a few months, but then ultimately they wear off. You end up back into these painful feelings. And as we were talking this morning, sometimes this is so far apart from each other, you don't even realize that it's occurring. So for example, if you have a new job that you really want and you chase after that new job, and then you get that new job and it's the perfect job. It's the best location. It's a great salary. It's a wonderful title. Your coworkers are amazing. The mission of the company is outstanding. And you're like, I found the perfect job. I'm so excited. I'm so happy. And now maybe 5 years later, the company goes out of business or you get laid off or the company moves to another location across to a different country or to another part of your country and you can't move. And now you lose your job 5 years later. And now you're sad or you're frustrated or irritated because you've lost this job. Well, you don't recognize that the whole reason why this anger is arising is because of the craving. It's the craving that's causing that. Because when you allow the mind to get conditioned pleasant feelings, it's only a matter of time before you get painful feelings. What conditioned pleasant feelings are, is this is where you're basing your inner feelings on some condition. The condition is this craving, desire, attachment that's in the mind. And now because the mind's longing and yearning for it to be sunny, for example, if you always want it to be sunny, and now when you see sun, you get happy. But then when it rains, you're going to get sad or frustrated or irritated because the sun is not permanent. It's not possible for the sun to be permanent. So when you experience that change, the unenlightened mind doesn't understand that. And as long as you're allowing the mind to form these conditioned pleasant feelings, it's only a matter of time before you experience the painful feelings are going to arise. So you need to be able to see those pleasant feelings as part of the problem. These are conditioned pleasant feelings, conditioned happiness, conditioned excitement. By the time you get to enlightenment, you're beyond this. You're no longer experiencing conditional feelings. You're no longer experiencing the conditional pleasant feelings because the mind is having unconditioned joy or unconditioned happiness. Where in the unenlightened state, because of this craving, you can only be happy when these conditions are met. When it's sunny outside, when my mom does this, when my bank account is this, when my boss does this, when my life partner does this, if I get to go to Thailand, you know, I'll be happy or whatever it is, right? You have this long list of things that if all these things happen, then you'll be happy. And the longer your list is, the less and less happiness that you have because your mind wants all these things to be true. But because of impermanence, all those things can't be true. And as soon as you form your inner feelings of happiness based on some condition, that condition is impermanent. So therefore, your mind's going to ultimately end up in the painful feelings at some point. So this is what the mind's doing when it has desire, attachment, wants, expectations. It's not the object itself that's causing this. It's inside the mind. It's the longing and yearning. Let me give you an example. Let's say that I have a liter of water and I take this water with me in the car and I'm going to go on a hike and I'm traveling 30 minutes to this trail and I get to the front of the trail. I get out of the car. I start walking down the trail and I'm planning to be out for 6 or 8 hours and I'm 30 minutes down the trail and I realize I forgot my water. Oh my goodness, I forgot my water. Ah, and you might run back to your car, maybe twist your ankle on the way, sling open the door. Ah, water, water, water. Oh, I forgot my water. This is an attachment. It's a craving, a longing, a yearning. But it's not the object. It's not the water, because you need water. You need to survive. You need water. Because another person could do that same thing. They could be walking down the trail, 30 minutes down the trail, and they could be like, you know what? I forgot my water. You know, I should turn around and go get that, because I'm going to be out here for 6 or 8 hours. And if I don't have water, that's really unwise. So let me go get my water. And you could just calmly turn around, calmly walk back to your car, open the door, get the water. Sweet. I got my water. Let's go on the hike. You can maintain your calmness and your composure because you're not attached to it. So it's not the object, because in both scenarios, the object was the same. It was the water. But in the first scenario, the individual had craving, they had desire, they had longing, yearning, they were wanting, they were expecting this water. And when they didn't get what they wanted, that's when the mind experienced that discontentedness arising, and now they rush back to their car, making unwise decisions, going so fast, they maybe twisted their ankle, maybe they slung open their car door and hit it up against a tree and scratched their car. The craving was motivating these unwise decisions, these unskillful decisions. But the person who realized without craving that, I don't have my water, you know, let me turn around and go get that, and then just calmly walk back to the car, no issues. They don't twist their ankle. They don't scratch their car. They don't have any issues. They just calmly get the water. So you can see that what a craving, desire, attachment is, it's not the object. It's what's going on inside the mind. This is what craving, desire, attachment is. You guys understanding this one? It can be selfish desires, right? The mind longing, yearning for it. So the way that you solve this, the antidote or the wholesome roots, this is breathing mindfulness meditation and generosity. We just did breathing mindfulness meditation together, and I taught it this morning. I walked through it very thoroughly and taught this to you guys so that you could understand what this is and how to apply it in your life. What you're doing in breathing mindfulness meditation is you're arising mindfulness or awareness of mind, so you can be aware of what's going on in the mind. So when you're out there on that hiking trail and you feel the craving arising, you can feel and the mind pulling towards that water, you'll know that if you have mindfulness. If you have awareness of your mind and you're walking in the mall and you see the mind longing and yearning and pulling towards that new pair of shoes or that jewelry or that computer or that phone or whatever it is, you can notice that because you can notice it in your mind. So when you're training your meditation, you're exercising the mind and you're cultivating this mindfulness or awareness of mind, and you're cultivating this concentration where you can be focused. So that way you can be aware when these cravings are arising. And now in the meditation, when your mind is moving off the breath and you're cutting that off and letting it go and you're bringing the mind back to the breath, this is you getting more control and more discipline over your mind, so that in daily life where you see your mind having cravings, desires, attachments, you can cut them off and let them go. But if you're not practicing breathing mindfulness meditation, you're not developing the wholesome qualities of mindfulness, which is awareness of mind. You're not developing the wholesome quality of concentration, and you're not developing the ability to easily let things go. So in this meditation, the goal isn't to eliminate your thoughts. Sometimes people think that's what the goal is, because you're cutting off thoughts and cutting off thoughts and cutting off thoughts. That's not the actual goal, to eliminate your thoughts. As long as you're alive, you're going to have thoughts. The goal is to train the mind to notice your thoughts sooner and sooner with your mindfulness and concentration, and to be able to easily let them go. So if 20, 30, 50 times during your meditation, you had to let go and let go and let go and let go and let go, this is really good for your mind, because the unenlightened mind wants to hold on. That's what craving does, is it holds on and holds on and holds on. So you're training your mind to easily let go. So now in daily life, where you're getting ready to go interview for a job and you notice your mind's longing and yearning and you're getting so excited to go in there, you're going to make some unwise decisions through these cravings. So you need to restrain the mind. You need to pull it back, almost like you're riding a horse and you pull the reins back. So when you notice that your mind is longing and yearning and pulling towards any object at all, then you'd like to cut that off and restrain the mind and pull it back, slow the mind down. So that's what breathing mindfulness meditation is doing for you. It's exercising the mind. So in meditation, you're cutting off anything and everything that arises, but knowing that you're going to have thoughts. Even when you're enlightened, you're going to have thoughts. It's just that you'll have fewer thoughts, that your mind will be still, your mind will be quieted. So in the unenlightened state, you'll have a bombardment of thoughts, or you'll have a thought and you'll indulge in it for a period of time, maybe 2 or 3 minutes, and then you realize, like, oh yeah, that's right, I'm meditating, let me bring my mind back. So when you're enlightened, you're still going to have thoughts, but you're going to notice it right away and you're going to cut it off and let it go really easily. In the unenlightened state, you get a bombardment of thoughts, or you indulge in a thought for a period of time. So in meditation, you're cutting off anything and everything that arises because you're trying to build discipline and control of the mind. But then in daily life, you practice your mindfulness. You practice your awareness of mind. So if you're riding a motorbike, if you're walking down the street, if you're talking to a friend, you practice awareness of mind, that you're aware of what's going on in the mind. And then any unwholesome qualities that arise, that's what you cut off. If a wholesome thing comes up in daily life, you go forward, right? If you like, right? You think about taking your mom out to lunch or out to dinner, that's a wholesome thought. That's generosity. Take your mom out to dinner. That'd be lovely. But in meditation, if the thought of taking mom out to dinner comes up, you cut it off and you cut it off and you cut it off. Not because it's unwise to take your mom out to dinner, but because you're trying to discipline the mind. You're trying to gain this control of the mind. But now in daily life, you're only cutting off unwholesome thoughts, right? If you think about, you know, stealing your mom's shoes, right? We were talking about the shoe thief on the way back from Sungapang, or some other unwholesome thought comes up, right? You think about stealing something or having sexual misconduct, or you think about lying or taking substances that cause heedlessness, or any of these unwholesome things you're going to learn as part of the path to enlightenment, that's what you cut off. Or if you're noticing the anger, or the frustration, or the agitation, or something like this coming up, that's what you cut off, anything unwholesome. And you're going to learn about the wholesome qualities of the mind and the unwholesome qualities of the mind as part of this path. So anytime you see unwholesome qualities arising, if you've been exercising the mind and breathing mindfulness meditation, you'll be able to cut those off and let them go. And you can do this internally as you train more. But when you're just getting started, sometimes you need to redirect the mind. So say I'm on the sofa, if you're watching the news and you see something on the news and you're noticing this frustration arising, it's your craving that's causing that. But what you should try to do is you should try to cut it off and let it go so that you can let go and train the mind to not be frustrated, not to form this conditioned feeling. But because you may not have the discipline and the control to do that early on, what you may need to do is redirect the mind. Turn off the news, get up and go for a walk, go for a bike ride. Don't allow the mind to sit there and dwell in that conditioned feeling of frustration or agitation. So anytime you're noticing frustration or any kind of other discontent feelings, loneliness, boredom, anything like this, you need to be able to cut it off and let it go. That's what the breathing mindfulness meditation is helping you to do. And you're going to get more help on this tomorrow when we talk about the Eightfold Path. I'll explain to you more about how to do this. Then this other thing you would like to do is practice generosity. These are two proactive trainings that you can do, breathing mindfulness meditation and practicing generosity, to gradually train the mind to let go. Because when you have craving, desire, attachment in the mind, it tends to be selfish. It tends to hold on to things very tightly. It doesn't want to let go. So when you're practicing generosity, which is sharing your time, your effort, your energy, your resources, more than is strictly required in any given situation without any expectation of anything in return. This is training your mind to let go. So you can practice generosity very easily. Say you're walking into a store. When you open the door, you're going to open the door for yourself to go in, and you look back and you see someone behind you. Maybe you stand there and hold the door for them, right? This is generosity. You're sharing your time, your effort, your energy, and your resources without any expectation of anything in return. And you need to be careful here, because if you're holding the door and you're expecting a thank you and somebody doesn't say thank you, you're going to get frustrated because you have a craving, you have an expectation, you have a want. Right? So when you're practicing pure generosity, it's without any expectation of anything in return, even a thank you for holding the door. You need to practice generosity because it's wise and it's going to enhance the qualities of your mind. So when you're giving and sharing, you can do all kinds of things. You can donate blood, you can donate money, you can donate clothes or supplies, you can go places and volunteer your time. There's lots of things you can do to practice generosity, right? Even if you're at a store and somebody drops something on the floor, you could help them pick it up, That's generosity. So you would be practicing generosity on a consistent, ongoing basis throughout your day. And this is helping you to train your mind to let go, to not always see things that you do that they need to be self-pleasing. They need to be self-satisfying. They need to fulfill your own selfish desires. Because when you have craving, desire, attachment in the mind oftentimes becomes selfish. And you would like to flip that around and practice generosity to train the mind to let go. So these are the two antidotes that you're using. And when you see the Eightfold Path tomorrow, you'll see how these plug into the overall Eightfold Path. But this is just getting to the core of it. Do you guys have any questions on this poison or this unwholesome root or this fire or these solutions here? Let me see if they have any questions online. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions here. Okay, so now we'll move on to the next one because now you guys are understanding this. And we talked about this one to a certain degree this morning with the Four Noble Truths. But now we're going to move into the anger, right? Because when the mind gets what it wants, it's going to get those pleasant feelings. But when it doesn't get what it wants, it's going to have these painful feelings, this sadness, frustration, irritation, annoyance, guilt, shame, fear, stress, anxiety. These painful feelings are arising. This next one, this anger, can arise in the mind. This is where the mind has these certain unpleasant feelings, and it falsely associates those painful feelings to a person or to a situation. The mind feels uncomfortable with these painful feelings, so it tries to push them away because it doesn't feel comfortable with these painful feelings. Ultimately, when you eliminate all your cravings, you won't experience the painful feelings anymore. You won't have any anger. You can get to the point where you never experience anger ever again, but you need to eliminate your cravings to be able to do that. So as long as you have craving, there's going to be this anger that arises. This is the bitterness, the hostility, the aggression, the resentment, the animosity. And this can come out in your intentions, your speech, and your actions. And as long as you're putting out that harmful speech or that harmful intention or that harmful action, then as you're harming others, it's going to come back to you. So as you know, we've all damaged relationships before by being bitter and harsh and hostile, whether it's with our family members or our friends or our coworkers. We've all done this because we all were born with these three poisons in our mind. We had these three poisons as we were growing up and as we were experiencing life. So we've all done that, right? We've all been bitter and harsh and hostile, and you can see the results of what it produced. It produced broken relationships. So with what we call wrong view, when you falsely associate the painful feelings that you're having to something external, when somebody is, say, disrespectful or impolite or unkind to you, you may think that that anger, that hostility, that you're almost justified in treating that person that way. And you might think that you now have to teach this person a lesson and they need to learn to stop being impolite, unkind, unfriendly, and disrespectful. But this is your anger that is arising. Or you might hold on to certain resentment. If somebody's harmed you, someone can't cause you discontentedness, but somebody can harm you, right? Somebody can steal your car. This has harmed you, right? Because now you can't go to work. Now you can't pick up your kids from school, perhaps. Now you can't go to the grocery store and get food or supplies. Someone can harm you by stealing, right? They've harmed you, but they can't cause your discontentedness. Any kind of anger or frustration that is arising, this is because of your mind's own craving, desire, attachment. So if people have harmed you in the past, you might have certain resentment in your mind. You might be holding on to certain feelings towards this person, but this is only harming you. It's only going to harm your own mind. If you're holding on to resentment and anger and hostility, this is harming you. And you may not ever even see that person ever again, but your resentment, your anger, your hostility, it's arising in other situations. Even though you may never see that person again, this anger and bitterness and hostility is arising in those situations, and it damages current relationships. So if somebody's being bitter and harsh and hostile or impolite or unkind to you, you might go down this well-worn path of anger. Maybe the grass is worn out, the stickers are pushed back, maybe the branches have been cut down, and this path goes to broken relationships. You know where that path of anger and hostility goes to. But what you're doing on the path to enlightenment is you're working to eliminate this anger, this bitterness, this hostility. So now that when somebody is impolite, unkind, unfriendly, and disrespectful, if you're noticing anger arising, if you have right view, then you understand your anger is being caused by your own mind. It's not this person. And it would be very unwise to go down this path of anger and bitterness and hostility because you're just going to damage your relationships. So now what you're trying to do is go down this new path. You're trying to forge this new path. And this is the loving kindness. So you practice loving kindness meditation to gradually transform the mind to have this genuine interest in seeing all beings be well, this active goodwill. You're essentially rewiring the mind with this meditation. It's a different type of meditation than what I just did with you guys. We're going to be doing this throughout the course. I think tomorrow morning I'm going to be teaching it to you, or I'm going to teach you this meditation, how to essentially rewire the mind so that it's not wired to go down this path of anger and bitterness and hostility anymore. That whenever something happens, you just understand its impermanence, right? When your teacher shows up to class, that's not on time. It's just impermanence, right? It's just impermanence. It was out of his control, right? The traffic was there. We couldn't get here. Or if somebody's bitter and harsh and hostile or disrespectful to you, if you crave everybody to be respectful, then when someone's disrespectful, you're not going to understand that that's impermanence. They're unwise for being disrespectful to you, but that's their issue. If you decide to get angry and bitter and harsh, now you're making it your issue. So if you can understand that not everyone's going to be polite, kind, friendly, or respectful, now when someone's disrespectful, you just understand, okay, they're being disrespectful. That's their choice, but no need for me to get angry because that's not going to solve anything. So you can rewire your mind to understand that this is just impermanence. That's all it is. If I come outside and my car has a scratch on it, no need to get angry and bitter and harsh about that. Let's just solve the problem. Okay, there's a scratch. Is there a note on the car? No note. Okay, well, it would have been nice if they left a note. They didn't leave a note. Okay, well, what's my next option? Is there any CCTV cameras? Maybe security is around. Maybe they can help me find out who scratched my car. Or maybe you have insurance. You can just go get it fixed. But the anger, the hostility, the bitterness, it isn't helping you. Because if you go talk to the security guards with a lot of bitterness and hostility, they're not going to be willing to help you, right? And then when that anger is arising, your mind gets so polluted that you're not going to be able to make wise decisions in this situation. I guarantee you there's people sitting in jail right now who came outside, saw their car was scratched, the person was standing right there, and they maybe beat them up, or they maybe even murdered this person just because of impermanence. And there was this craving in the mind for their car to look permanently beautiful. And when they saw that scratch, their mind got so angry because their craving was triggered, right? This craving to keep the car permanent. And now this anger arose, and they either beat that person up or they might have murdered them. And now they're sitting in jail for the rest of their life. And this is very unfortunate. So this anger isn't helping you at all. It's just causing you difficulties in your relationships. So if you can transform your mind with this loving kindness meditation, building up this loving kindness where you have this genuine interest in seeing all beings be well and this active goodwill, now through the meditation, you transform your mind. But to really, truly transform the mind, you need to go out into the world and practice your loving kindness through your intentions, your speech, and your actions, being loving and kind with the people around you. And this is one of the reasons why we go on these excursions during the retreat, to give you guys a chance to practice your generosity, to practice your loving kindness, to practice these teachings where you can be loving and kind to the people around you. It's pretty easy to be loving and kind to someone who's loving and kind with you, right? That's pretty easy when you're around people who are loving and kind. But it's when people are bitter and harsh and hostile to you. Can you still be loving and kind in that situation? That's where you've got to really practice. So you're essentially forging this new path, this old path of bitterness, hostility, and animosity. The grass is pushed back. The branches are knocked down, the stickers are pushed back. You know where this path leads to, is broken relationships. But with the loving kindness meditation and practicing loving kindness in daily life, you're getting out your machete and you're now forging this new path. You're cutting down the stickers, you're cutting down the branches. You're trying to forge this new path so that now you go down this path of loving kindness. And as you go down this path more and more, it's going to get worn out. Initially, it's really hard to go down this path. It's really challenging for you because it's a new path. You have to forge a new path. But as you go down this path of loving kindness more and more, it gets easier and easier to go down this path because you've pushed back the stickers and you've pushed back the grass and the branches. And now this is the well-worn path. This old path gets overgrown. The anger, that path, that bitterness, that hostility, it gets overgrown. The bushes grow back, the grass grows back. And now when something happens that you disagree with, instead of going down there, you go down this path of loving kindness. Where right now, if you disagree with something that somebody does, you might be argumentative, or you might be hostile, or you might be bitter with them because you're craving for everyone to do something that you agree with. You might be longing and yearning, wanting everyone to agree with you. So you go down this path. It's almost like a fight until death. But if you understand impermanence, that it's not possible for everyone to do the same things as you. There's only one person that you're going to agree with 100% of the time. Do you know who that person is? Who are you going to agree with 100% of the time? Yourself, right? That's the only person you're going to agree with 100% of the time. So if every time you disagreed with somebody, you fought with them and you argued and you were bitter and hostile and harsh, you're going to be fighting with a lot of people because there's 8 billion people in this world. And you can't agree with them all. You're only going to agree with one person 100% of the time. So if you're getting bitter and harsh and hostile when you disagree with somebody, then you're going to be in arguments with a lot of people. So you would like to be able to see that disagreement doesn't mean that you need to argue. Disagreement doesn't mean that you're disrespectful. If you disagree with somebody, that's normal. That's impermanence. You can disagree with somebody and still be respectful with that individual if you're training your mind. Right? You can have different opinions. Of course we have different opinions because we've had different experiences in life. So we all have different experiences. So we have different opinions. This is normal. We have different experiences. So we're going to make different decisions. So when you encounter somebody who has made a different decision than you, rather than going down the path of anger and bitterness, you can go down this path of loving kindness and just understand like, okay, this person is doing something different because they've had different experiences than me. And I don't need to be angry or bitter or harsh with them. I can just be loving and kind because this is just impermanence. So this loving kindness meditation and practicing loving kindness in daily life is what's going to transform the mind away from the anger. Because whenever you make decisions through anger, it's going to motivate unskillful conduct and you're going to make unwise decisions that produce unwholesome results. But when you can practice loving kindness, where you're interested in seeing all beings be well and you have active goodwill towards others, that will motivate wise decisions that produce wholesome results. Okay, any questions on this one? Okay, and now where all of this is coming from is it's coming from this third poison that a lot of people translate to ignorance or delusion or confusion or misunderstanding. I like to use the phrase unknowing of true reality because the unenlightened mind just doesn't understand what it doesn't understand. It doesn't understand that it has craving, desire, attachment. It doesn't understand this anger. It just doesn't understand. It has a lack of wisdom. And as long as it doesn't understand, then the craving and anger is going to continue. And the mind's stuck in this continuous cycle that it'll crave and crave and crave, and it'll chase after something. In some cases, it gets what it wants. In other cases, it doesn't, and it ends up in these painful feelings. And sometimes what the unenlightened mind does when it gets into the painful feelings is it starts craving some more because it thinks the way to get back to something that's somewhat comfortable is to get to those pleasant feelings. So this is why if you've ever been angry and you decided to go shopping to buy something, this is why. Or if you've ever decided to go have sex with somebody, this is why. Or if you've ever decided to go have drink or alcohol or drugs, this is why. Or gambling or something like this. Because when you're experiencing the painful feelings of anger and stress and anxiety, the mind that is untrained and unwise, it will start craving some more. And it feels like that's the way to get back to something that's somewhat comfortable. So it's this ignorance or this unknowing of true reality, this lack of wisdom that's keeping this craving and anger continuing in the mind. So the antidote to the ignorance is wisdom. That's why when you first start learning with me, I teach you not to believe anything that I share because belief isn't going to lead you to wisdom. In order for you to antidote the craving and anger, you need to get to wisdom, right? As long as this ignorance is in the mind and the mind doesn't understand craving and anger, it will continue to experience that over and over and over again. As long as it doesn't understand breathing mindfulness meditation and generosity, it will continue to experience craving. As long as it doesn't understand loving kindness meditation and how to practice loving kindness through your intention, speech, and actions, you will continue to stay stuck in this continuous cycle of being angry and bitter and harsh over and over and over and over again. So it's when you arise wisdom that you learn the teachings, you investigate them, you examine them, you reflect on them to independently verify them and see that they're true, and then you practice them, that you start transforming the mind. So this wisdom that transforms the mind, it's not just intellectual learning. There is a certain amount of intellectual learning that you need to do in a classroom like this, or reading a book, or talking to a teacher. You need to do the intellectual learning. But when you really transform this ignorance is when you're practicing the teachings. You might intellectually understand the teachings to a certain degree, but it's when you're practicing the teachings that the ignorance is fully transformed, because now you can actually do it. You can actually do the work. You can actually function without this ignorance. But as long as your mind's getting angry and frustrated, there's still this ignorance in there. So what the mind's ignorant of is the three universal truths, the Four Noble Truths. We talked about those this morning. It's ignorant of this Eightfold Path, which we're going to talk about tomorrow. I'm going to walk you through step by step using the words of the Buddha. It's unknowing of true reality is this of the five precepts, of the Brahmaviharas, this natural law of Gama, the seven factors of enlightenment, extensive meditation training, and ultimately the 10 fetters. The 10 fetters are a more detailed description of what's really going on in the unenlightened mind. The Buddha teaches in this layered effect where you have the Four Noble Truths that is explaining to you at a very high level, giving you a window into what's plaguing the unenlightened mind. Then the three poisons or the three unwholesome roots or the three fires are giving you another level of detail. But then it's the 10 fetters that is giving you the ultimate detail of exactly the individual pollutions that are in the mind. They all bubble up to these three fires or these three unwholesome roots or these three poisons. This is like a higher level description, but it's the 10 fetters that is really describing it at a detailed level. And in this retreat, I'm going to help you understand the first three in detail, because that's what helps you to get to the first stage of enlightenment. This whole retreat is about helping you get to the first stage of enlightenment, which will set you up to be able to actually get to enlightenment itself. So the mind is unknowing of true reality of these things. And that's why you're not believing these. You would like to get to this wisdom. With guidance from a teacher, you can learn, you can reflect, to independently verify, and you can practice. Because when you hear me talking about these examples, you're probably reflecting on some of your experiences in life. And you're like, yep, I did that. Yep, I did that. Yep, I did that. I did that. Yep, I remember that. Yep, I did that. I did that. And this is where you can see that you're not a bad person. You can laugh at yourself, right? Don't take it so seriously, right? Your mind just lacks wisdom. That's all it is. We all came into this world lacking wisdom, right? Just like we lacked wisdom of the natural law of gravity, and we made unwise decisions, and we fell down, we hit our head, we bumped our elbows. We made unwise decisions and it produced unwholesome results. Well, the mind in the unenlightened state lacks wisdom of the natural laws of existence. That's what this ignorance or this unknowing of true reality is. It lacks wisdom of the teachings of the Buddha, and therefore, because of its lack of wisdom, this unknowing of true reality, it makes unwise decisions and it experiences unwholesome results. The mind struggles and has difficulties, just like you did when you lacked wisdom of the natural law of gravity. So as long as you lack wisdom, you'll make unwise decisions, not because you're a bad person. You're not a bad person because you didn't understand the natural law of gravity when you were growing up. You just didn't know what you didn't know. And then slowly but surely you learned. And now you can climb ladders, you can ride bicycles, you can get on motorbikes, you can get on airplanes, and you fully awoke to the wisdom of the natural law of gravity. Well, there's these other natural laws that the Buddha taught that is helping you to understand the world around you. The Buddha didn't teach a bunch of rules or commandments. He didn't teach you the way that the world should be. And if everybody follows these rules, then we'll all get to peacefulness together. No, he taught you the way the world is. He's explaining to you the way the world works and the way the world functions. So now with this wisdom, you can awaken to that wisdom and you can understand how your mind functions in the unenlightened state. And then you can train it to awaken to this wisdom. And now you'll function through these natural laws, making wise decisions that produce wholesome results. like this natural law of gravity, I have this glass of water that I don't put out here in front of me because I know if I put it out here in front of me, I'll knock it over and then it'll spill. That's an unwise decision. And when you learn the natural law of gravity, you realize, nope, I'm not going to put that there. I'm going to put it back here. And now I've never spilled water since I've been here at this temple. I never spilled it because I know that that's a safe place. So you start making wiser decisions. You tie your shoes tighter. You look at the surface of the street or the sidewalk and you don't fall down like we did when we were kids. Because we have wisdom. So when you have wisdom about things like the three universal truths, the four noble truths, the eightfold path, and all these other things, you'll make wiser decisions that will then produce wholesome results for yourself. And this is what it means to awaken to the wisdom of the path to enlightenment, or awaken to the wisdom of enlightenment, or awaken the mind. You're awakening and moving to this higher consciousness where you understand the world around you and you understand these natural laws, and now you can function that way. But right now, you don't understand them. So that's why some of your relationships, you might be struggling, or you might have difficulties, or you might have challenges in certain aspects of your life. You might be sitting around and feeling lonely or bored sometimes. That's because the mind hasn't been fully trained. When you fully train the mind and eradicate these three poisons, then you'll experience the purification of your mind. These three poisons won't be there anymore. And now the brightness and the radiance of the enlightened mind can shine through. But as long as you have this pollution in your mind, you'll experience a lack of concentration, a lack of focus. You'll experience resentfulness and guilt and shame and fear and boredom and loneliness and all these discontent feelings, just because the mind is plagued with this pollution. And as a being is born into the world, they're born into the world with craving and ignorance. We're not born with anger. Right? We don't go into the nursery at the hospital hating other babies, right? We acquire this over time due to our cravings that when we grew up, we wanted chocolate, right? We wanted chocolate 2 years old, 3 years old, 5 years old. We wanted mom and dad to give us chocolate and ice cream. We wanted it so badly. And when they would give it to us, we get happy. We get excited. We're like, hey, we got chocolate. Yeah, it's a good day. It's a good day. We got ice cream. But then at some point, because of impermanence, mom and dad said, no, you're not getting chocolate today. We cried. We were upset. We were so angry. Our anger arose because of our craving, our longing, our yearning for this ice cream or chocolate. Our anger arose. And then we falsely attributed that to our mom or our dad. We thought they were the most horrible mom and dad we've ever met. There's no other mom that's more horrible than you. You won't give me my chocolate. Right? We tried to guilt them and shame them into giving us what we wanted. And this was all coming from our ignorance. So as we went through life with all these cravings growing up as a child, sometimes we got what we wanted, sometimes we didn't. And we started forming this anger, this hostility, this bitterness in the mind, thinking that the problem was outside. When in reality, all this time, the problem was inside the mind. So every argument you've ever been in, every time you've ever been frustrated or angry, it's all been caused by your own mind. You might not understand that at the time, but the more that you understand these teachings, you can see how your mind caused it every single time. It doesn't mean the other person was an angel. It doesn't mean that they didn't do anything unwise at all. It just means that when you are angry, it's your own mind causing it. But the beauty in understanding this is if you understand that your mind is causing its own anger, the beauty is that you can solve it. Because your mind is causing it, you can actually solve it. You can eliminate it. If it's everybody else that's causing you to be angry, you got to train 8 billion people to do things your way. You got to fix everybody else. But if you understand that it's your mind that's causing this anger, it's this craving, anger, and ignorance, now all you got to do is get wisdom of how to train your own mind. You just need to train one mind. Your job just went from this to this, right? Because you don't have to train 8 billion people to do things your way. So this is why you're motivated and encouraged, and it's suggested that you cultivate wisdom, because it's wisdom that's going to antidote this ignorance or this unknowing of true reality. So any questions on this one? Any questions here? Any questions online? Let me see if we got any questions online. Oh, we got a lot of things online. Somebody's saying something here. It looks like Chris. Okay, let's see what Chris has to say. All right. Can you explain how having multiple spouses creates harm? Okay. So if you're having multiple spouses, like multiple wives or multiple husbands, and you're having sex with all these different people, these individuals are going to be attached to you. And now when they're attached to you, their craving is being triggered. Their anger is going to be triggered, their hostility. And now this is where you can get injured. You can get murdered. You can get sexually transmitted diseases. You can get all kinds of things like this coming back to you. This is the results of your decision. So the wise decision here would be to just have one partner. And that's why the Buddha teaches that, because not only is he teaching you how to train your mind in order to get to this enlightenment, he's also teaching you how to exist in a world with a whole bunch of unenlightened beings. So let me take something more simple. Let's say you walk into a classroom where you're a student and there's a professor, and this professor has a stapler on their desk and you're getting ready to turn in a college paper. And now the professor isn't there, but you pick up the stapler and you start stapling the paper. And now they walk in the door and they're like, hey, what are you doing? That's my stapler. What are you doing? They're attached to their stapler, right? They're craving. They're attached to it. They're not practicing generosity. They're like, hey, what are you doing? That's my stapler. Well, now their anger arises. They falsely attribute that to you because they don't understand that they're having craving, desire, attachment, that they're having this anger, and it's all because of their ignorance. They don't understand that. They haven't studied the teachings of the Buddha. Now you get a failing grade on that paper, or now you get a failing grade in the entire class, right? This is going to produce unwholesome results because of your unwise decision. So when you learn the teachings of the Buddha, you realize that he's providing you guidance, not only how to train your own mind, but how to peacefully coexist with other beings that are going to have craving, anger, and ignorance in their mind. So if you have a stapler that you're using that you haven't asked permission from your professor, then they can be attached and now they're going to experience the anger and then attribute that to you, and now some harm is going to come to you. And the same thing is going to happen with your spouse. If you have multiple spouses, they're going to get attached, right? And now they're holding on and they're clinging, and now you're going around from person to person to person. And now, as I said, you can get beat up, you can get murdered, you can get sexually transmitted diseases, you're going to have a lack of wealth, right? Because you're going to be spending a lot of money to maintain all these households and all these partners that you're having. So there's all kinds of harms that you're causing in order to have all these different partners, when in reality, it'd be more wise to have one loyal partner. Okay, so he's giving us additional information here. Chris says, I have been married for 14 years and have not had multiple spouses, but have heard multiple spouses and justified in social media based on a long history of men having multiple wives in the past. There are also religions such as Mormons that teach it's okay to have multiple wives if the husband can raise both or more financially, or support, I guess. I'd like to understand this more, to know it fully myself, and to be able to explain it to other people. Thank you, Teacher David. P.S. I think Gautama Buddha may have also addressed men as having multiple wives 2,500 years ago without correct it. Is there a reason for this, or is there a difference between then and now? So during the lifetime of the Buddha, there were people that had multiple wives, but he didn't advise that. He advised to just have one partner for the reasons that I just shared. If you understand the natural law of karma, of cause and effect, or action and results, any decision that you make, it's going to produce some result. So all of his teachings, they're not rules or commandments or anything like that. He's showing you what's wise, because if you're causing harm, then there's going to be some harm that comes to you. So if you have multiple partners sexually, this is why you get sexually transmitted diseases. And some of those are actually fatal, I think, right? Like HIV can be fatal. You can die from that. And this is the harm that's coming to you based on your unwise decision. And this is from the craving, the longing, the yearning, the wanting, having multiple partners. There needs to be a certain craving in the mind to do that. And that's why it's producing the unwholesome results, or the unwholesome karma. That's what the natural law of karma is doing, is helping you to be able to see where you're making unwise decisions. The natural law of karma is the most unbiased teacher that you'll ever find. That whenever you make a decision, you can look at what comes back to you. And if it's wholesome, you know that you've made wise decisions. But if it's unwholesome, it's from unwise decisions. So you can look at the decisions that you make and you can see whether it was wise or unwise. The Buddha is going to guide you in certain decisions and help you to see, But then it's up to you to decide for yourself what decisions you'll make. But you can look at the karma that you're experiencing, the results of your decisions. And if you're experiencing something unwholesome, it's from your unwise decisions. Whereas if you're experiencing something wholesome, you've made some wise decisions. So this is actually a good transition over to the summary of our class tonight, which is helping you understand this three poisons, three unwholesome roots, or three fires. As a summary, this is craving, anger, and ignorance, or some people refer to it as greed, hatred, and delusion if you learn from other teachers, or desire, ill will, and confusion. But then there's these antidotes, or these three wholesome roots, which is generosity, loving kindness, and wisdom. That's the exact opposites. So whenever you make decisions through craving, anger, and ignorance, if you have a selfish desire, if you're craving, if you're longing, if you're yearning, it's going to produce an unwholesome result for you. If you have anger, hatred, ill will, and you make a decision through that, it's going to produce unwholesome results. And as you have ignorance or this unknowing of true reality and you make decisions through that, and part of that ignorance is having multiple partners, that's going to produce unwholesome results for you. But then when you make decisions through generosity, which is the giving and sharing of more than is strictly required in any given situation, such as your time, effort, energy, and resources without any expectation of anything in return, that's always going to produce wholesome results whenever you practice pure generosity. And then when you practice loving kindness, which is a genuine interest in seeing all beings be well, an active goodwill, that's going to produce wholesome results. And then when you practice through wisdom, making wise decisions to have just one partner, for example, this is always going to produce wholesome results for you. So when you practice generosity, loving kindness, and wisdom, it's going to produce wholesome karma or wholesome results. So what you're doing on this path to enlightenment is you're using the Eightfold Path to bring down your unwholesome roots, the craving, anger, and ignorance. You're bringing that down. And then you're using the wholesome roots of generosity, loving kindness, and wisdom to bring those up in the mind. You're cultivating those in the mind and cultivating these wholesome mental qualities. But because you're making unwise decisions now and you've made them in the past, you're going to experience some unwholesome results. And you're going to continue to make some amount of unwise decisions, even from this point forward. You can't learn something like this, snap your fingers, and instantly eliminate craving, anger, and ignorance. This is where the Buddha talks about gradual training, gradual practice, and gradual progress. You need to gradually wear these away through this consistent, ongoing training, this dedication, this determination, and diligence to gradually train the mind. So you're going to be gradually bringing down the craving, anger, and ignorance. You're still going to be making some unwise decisions in some situations, but then you're gradually bringing up the generosity, loving kindness, and wisdom. And eventually you get to the point where you fully extinguished all your craving, anger, and ignorance. And that's when the mind's enlightened. And your mind is now practicing generosity, loving kindness, and wisdom in all situations. You're only making wise decisions and you're only experiencing wholesome results in your life. But in the meantime, you're going to still experience some unwholesome results coming back to you. But you're going to need to practice the Eightfold Path to extinguish those. So eradicating these unwholesome roots and practicing the wholesome roots is what brings the mind into the enlightened mental state by uprooting the pollutions or the defilements out of the mind and bringing in the wholesome roots into the mind. So this is everything I have to share with you guys on this topic. Unless you guys have questions, I'll just remind you guys online, you can put those into Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom. And then here at the temple, you can ask questions. If you'd like to use a microphone, we'll be able to hear you. Any questions? Wow, no questions. You guys are either sleepy or tired. Maybe the mosquitoes are biting you. You're hungry, sleepy. You have a question? Okay. You don't have to ask questions. I'm not craving for you to ask a question. I'm just surprised you guys don't have questions.
I guess it's on the going around.
You're welcome to have a seat and be comfortable. Relax, relax, Thailand, sabai, sabai, right?
Sabai, sabai. I guess, is it normal to feel, scared or afraid, knowing that things like, whether it be drugs or alcohol or multiple partners or the things that we've gone through in the past as, coping mechanisms to get through you know, with an unenlightened mind, we might be, or we feel like we're reliant on some of those external factors, and taking them away, it can cause anxiety or fear. You know, so to be scared, is that normal to feel fear about not having some of these coping mechanisms, for lack of a better word, in our lives?
Yeah, this is the mind not getting its cravings fulfilled. So, for example, if you are doing any of those things that you mentioned, right, the cravings, as long as you have those, the mind has a certain amount of happiness, right? But it's temporary. But then when you start letting that go, now your mind's not getting what it wants. It's not getting its cravings fulfilled. So now those painful feelings are going to rise, the fear, the sadness, the anger, the frustration. And I refer to this as you have to walk through the fire in order to appreciate the fresh air on the other side. So things sometimes get a little bit worse before they get better, kind of thing. And you need to do that. And this is your karma. This is an individual's karma, that because you allowed craving to exist and you got those pleasant feelings, at some point, you're going to have to experience these painful feelings to walk out of this unenlightened mind. You're going to have to go through those painful feelings to let it go. So letting go of, maybe if you let go of alcohol, or if you let go of coffee, or you let go of marijuana or something like this, it's going to be painful for a period of time. Or like you guys have had relationships before, if you had to let go of a boyfriend or a girlfriend, it was painful letting them go. I remember my grandmother, she told me a couple of years ago, she's 100 years old now. She's always been independent. She drives herself everywhere. When she was about 94, 96, she finally gave up driving. She was driving her car. She was like, David, that was the most hardest thing for me to ever let go of. It was very painful for her to let go of that car because she was so independent, right? But she had to walk through that in order to get to the peacefulness and the joy on the other side. So you're going to need to experience that, but you do it in small little increments. So for example, when I was letting go of coffee, I let it go for maybe 3 or 4 days first. And then I had a coffee because the mind just wanted it so badly. I just had a coffee. And then I paid the price. I got a headache, you know, I felt bad for a while. But then I went like a week or two without a coffee. And then I had another coffee, right? And then I felt bad. I had a headache. And then went like 3 or 4 weeks. And eventually I got to 8 weeks. And I ended up having just a little bit of coffee. And then I threw it away and said, I'm never going to drink this coffee ever again. But it was painful doing that. And other things that you're going to let go of, it'll be painful. But what you're moving to is so much better than where you're at. Because where you're at, it's only temporary happiness, and you're still dealing with that fear and those other feelings, the sadness and frustration. But as you start seeing more and more of the peace and more of the joy come shining through in the mind, you're like, ah, this was so worthwhile. But it takes time to get through that. So the Buddha talks about it as a struggle. As you're letting go of these attachments, there's a certain struggle that you need to go through. And he says, don't shrink back from the struggle. Don't shrink back from the struggle. What we tend to do when we feel something uncomfortable, when we feel something painful, is we tend to walk away from it and we try to push it aside and kind of walk in the opposite direction, or sometimes run in the opposite direction. But what the Buddha is encouraging you to do, and what I encourage you to do, is to turn around and walk towards that thing, whatever it is. If you can walk towards it, then you can cultivate wisdom. So in a situation where, like my wife in the past, where we used to argue in the past, that was really hard to deal with. And then there was a point in time where I didn't argue and she was. And sometimes what I would feel like doing is walking away from it. And sometimes I did. I needed to walk away from it and protect my own contentedness. But then after I waited a day or two or a week or two, I would turn around and I would walk back towards it. And I would start spending time with her and talking to her and having conversation with her. And it felt challenging, but I cultivated the wisdom of how to have a wonderful relationship with her, so that now we don't argue at all. Everything's just very peaceful in our life. So whenever your mind is struggling, when you feel that struggle, it's because your mind has a lack of wisdom. If you run away from the problem, you're never going to cultivate the wisdom. You're just ensuring that it's going to happen again. So by turning around and walking towards the problem and then cultivating the wisdom that you need, now you'll overcome that obstacle and you'll ensure that it'll never happen again, because you'll be able to have more wisdom to be able to solve that situation in the future. So if you notice that the same problems keep reoccurring in your life over and over and over again, this is that cycle. that cycle that you're stuck in, and the mind just hasn't cultivated the wisdom. So whenever you're struggling in life, there's just some wisdom that you haven't cultivated yet. And that's where your teacher can come in, is that you can reach out to me privately and say, hey, David, I'm really struggling with this. Here's what I'm encountering. What are your thoughts? I won't tell you what to do, but I'll give you advice based on the natural law of karma. I'll say, if you do it this way, this is what you'll experience. If you do it this way, this is what you experience. But the decision's always yours. But at least you have somebody to reach out to cultivate wisdom. Because if you walk away from the problem, you're just going to ensure that it continues to happen because you haven't cultivated the wisdom. Because next time that thing occurs, you're still not going to know how to solve it. But if you cultivate the wisdom, now you can overcome it. But that fear is part of that unwholesome karma, because you've had craving before and you're maybe holding on to something, you know, marijuana or drugs or whatever it is that an individual might hold on to that we've all done in the past. Because we craved, because we got our pleasant feelings from it, now when we start letting that go, it's going to produce these painful feelings of stress, anxiety, fear. But if you walk through that, then you can get to the other side where the peacefulness and the joy is, because you'll let go of the craving and it will no longer be there. So it won't produce that fear anymore or that stress or anxiety. Mm-hmm. Yep. Great question. Let's see. Do we have any other questions online? Okay, I'm not seeing any other questions anywhere. So what I'll do then is just in class here, this is 8:30. This is where we actually plan to end our class. So this is perfect timing. I'll end class by just thanking you guys for joining. And if you'd like to continue to attend classes, we have classes starting tomorrow morning where I'm going to start with sharing with you guys. I think it's loving kindness meditation. Let's see. I've got it all right here. Okay. We're doing walking meditation tomorrow. Breathing mindfulness meditation is walking meditation. Then I'm going to teach you the Eightfold Path. That's going to take our whole morning. And then let's get through all of this. There's a lot to teach you tomorrow. And then our excursion is going to the elephant sanctuary. If you guys would like to go, this is where we're going to make medicine for the elephants. We're going to bathe them. We're going to feed them. There's no rides or there's no shows or anything like that. It's just a place that they take care of the elephants. And it's like they're teaching you and educating you what they do to take care of the elephants. We actually go there, we change clothes, we get dirty, get sloppy, whatever we do. Then we can take a shower and we can put on our clothes back if you like. So if you like to bring soap or shampoo or anything that you need, you can bring that with you and take a shower over there so that then when you come back, you can put on your fresh clothes if you like. So if you'd like to go to that, normally it's 1600 baht, but they gave us a special price of only 800 baht if you guys would like to go. They're going to come here and pick us up at 1:30 in vans, and then they're going to take us to the elephant sanctuary and bring us back in time for class at 6:30. So you're welcome to come to that if you're like. And by the way, let me know if you're going to come, because I need to take a count so they know how many vans to come and pick us up with. So if you could let me know today, that would be good. And then in the evening, we're going to be doing breathing mindfulness meditation in the walking position again. So you can practice that. You're going to practice it in the morning and then in the evening. And then I'm going to teach you the five precepts. These are five wise decisions that you can make that are going to produce wholesome results. And then if you don't make them in these wise ways, then you'll experience the unwholesome results. If you ever learned that the Buddha taught no killing, no stealing, no sexual misconduct, no lying, no intoxicants, he actually didn't teach this. That's not what he actually taught. He doesn't use words like that. I'm going to show you the original words of the Buddha, which gives you much more illuminating language where he really explains to you what he's actually teaching. Those rudimentary things that people teach, that sounds like black and white, or it sounds like rules or commandments. He actually didn't teach that way. He gives you much more illuminating language. So I'm going to use his original words and then be able to explain it to you and apply it to modern day, how you would apply it in your day-to-day life. So you'll be able to see me teach that tomorrow and you'll be able to learn it, perhaps for the first time through the original words of the Buddha. So that's what our plan is tomorrow. And as we break today, I would again like to thank you guys for joining and deciding to come here and learn and be dedicated to learn the teachings of the Buddha. But as we leave, if you could just keep in mind that this is a monastery and there's monks that are sleeping or in their rooms, if you could just be attentive to the volume of your voice as you guys leave. I'm sure you guys will have conversations on the way out, but we'll just make our way out politely and let them sleep and let them rest. That way we're making wise decisions about the volume of our voice. So Thank you all for joining. Thank you for your questions. Thank you for being interested in learning the teachings of the Buddha. And we'll see you guys perhaps in a future class. Have a wonderful evening. We'll see you next time. Sawadee krap. Sawadee krap.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To provide support for this podcast, visit patreon.com/supportbuddha. To access more teachings, visit buddhadailywisdom.com. There, you will discover a full range of courses, retreats, and online resources to assist you on the path to enlightenment. Remember, to establish a daily, consistent meditation practice, along with learning and practicing these teachings, a well-developed meditation practice is the foundation in which to train the mind to attain enlightenment.